The following presentation was recorded at Faith Builders. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
We sometimes plan our lives so full of emptiness. We sometimes dream of building such small things. We sometimes concentrate on nothing. A student shared that with us since we've been here. Talking about goals, I could weep when I think about what faces a real Christian teacher. And I trust that before we sit down, we will tell you why we still do it. We could get our work done if we didn't have to set our goals. You ever hear that? Sure you could. Because if you have no goal, you're always done. I think the teachers must spend more time at Brethren Heritage School worrying about goals than what they do teaching. There's parents that believe that. That's because they've listened to some child's story. And so we do know that parents and children communicate, but too often about the wrong thing. There were no goals when I went to school. I went to a little one-room schoolhouse, and I don't remember a teacher ever using the word. Setting goals, we thought that's something that happened in football. Do you ever hear anything like that? People believe that. Some of your people believe it. I'm sure they do. But you know, it's a different age in which we live. I realized this some 5-10 years ago. Right in the same country I grew up, just a little ways from where my father was born. There in Modesto, California. But I live in a completely different world than he lived in. In fact, brother and sister, it's a different world than when I was a boy. Everything is different. It's like a different country than from when I was a boy. When I was a boy, the men were supposed to smell like cows and the women like the kitchen. But today, they're supposed to smell like roses and lilacs. That's because, according to studies, that people in the United States now take 1.333 baths per day, carried out to 5 places. That's how much different it is just in my generation. It's a different world that we live in than what our fathers lived in. And it's not only different with reference to those things. Everything is different. Human nature may not be different, but the way it's expressed certainly is different. So my goal today is to keep you awake for an hour. Think I can do it? I wonder if you're really a teacher, if you've never wondered if you're a teacher. If you have too much confidence, you need to wonder about that. You need to examine yourself. Learning to the wise is like nectar to the king. And so the goal before us is to inspire students. And I was given this task and I wasn't aware of all of what was going on. I broke this into daily goals, yearly goals, eternal goals, and then we want to talk about hindrances and have a closing and set down. And I trust that, and we will have one question at least, besides those that are in the outline, and maybe you will have more before we set down. Daily goals, and somebody already alluded to it. Again, I pity the teacher that does not start the day out with prayer. Not that God's going to reveal anything great to you, but unless you're different than me, the days contain trials, unexpected trials. And if I do not ask the Lord to give me patience, then I'm going to go astray during the day. It calms me down. It may not do anything for the students, but it calms me down. And so we have that goal, that personal goal, every day of patience. And so we need to start the day with prayer. That doesn't sound very profound, does it? Do you ever hear it before? We've been told that many, many times. But there's a lot of little things that can interrupt the day. I can go down to school early, and I can think I have time to do some reading. I have time to get ready for the accounting lesson, the math lesson, whatever it is. And I will have time to have prayer. And what do you know? But the phone rings, and it's a parent. They called my house at 6 o'clock, and they found out I was already gone, and they wanted to talk and talk and talk. And I thought about that as I read that book that you were all given to read. I believe it's on page 64. She mentioned she went to school one day and got there and didn't have her watch. You ever go to school without your watch? You feel kind of half naked all day, and it just bothers you. You keep thinking, you know what, and you're looking down there and there's nothing there. That same day she went to school, I believe, and she didn't have the pen that she usually uses, her favorite pen. And just little things interrupt the day. And so we need that patience. We need to recognize that those times are coming. But daily goals, what would some of them be? We mentioned prayer to the Lord for patience. But I would encourage any of you with daily goals. I don't know how many students you have. Last year we had 48 teenagers, high schoolers, so a lot of what I say would refer to teenagers. But I'm sure that if we've been led by the Spirit, if we really feel like that we belong at school, there are times when you just sense that that boy or girl, something's wrong. And I can tell myself, I need to talk to them. And when I say talk to them, they may want to talk and talk for an hour after school, or talking to them, maybe just walking by, putting your hand on their shoulder, and asking them how everything is going. Is there anything I can do to help you? But if I don't write that down on a card, I use 3x5 cards for many, many things. I carry one in my pocket virtually all of the time. And I'll write down, talk to Darren today. Because if I don't write that down, the day will go by and I haven't talked to him. I was going to talk to Darren today. And I would encourage us to have daily goals. I know that in some curriculums, they would say that the teacher should personally talk to every student every day. That is very difficult, depending on how many students you have. But certainly, every 2 or 3 days, make it a habit of speaking just in a friendly, kind way to every student. Daily goals. You would be amazed at what that brings up. How many times do you suppose a student was sitting in your classroom wishing that they could ask the teacher something? But number one, they didn't want to bother you. Number two, they were too shy. Number three, they figured you would think the question was dumb. All of those things. And it has absolutely amazed me how many times when I've written down, I'm going to talk to these three students today, that's going to be top priority. How many times they say, oh, while you're here, and they got some little question they want to ask you. They would have never asked it if you didn't initiate it. And that is a daily goal the teacher needs to have some personal, heartfelt contact with a student. There is nothing at school will substitute for it. They may talk to their friend, but they need to talk to the teacher. They need to know that you care. They need to know that you will listen. They need to know what your answer is. And how many times have they asked me some little question, sometimes a big one, you never know what's coming, and they say, well, that's what my dad told me. But they wanted that reinforcement. It wasn't a waste of time with them. Daily goals. We need to have academic daily goals. Exact lessons plans. You need to know if you're teaching algebra, if you're teaching chemistry, if you're teaching English, whatever you're teaching, you need to know exactly what you intend to do that day. Otherwise, you'll never know when you finished your goals. Do you ever think about that? We want the students to have all these goals. What their goals are today, do you realize how many teachers do not want to be pinned down as to what their goals are that day? Is that really right? For us to be so hard on a student, you know, you get a demerit if you don't finish your goals. And yet as teachers,
what's our attitude about goals? Do we want to have goals? Well, no, I'd like to leave it flexible. Well, that's what they want to do. Leave it flexible. And we need to set that example. If you're in an open classroom and ours is a mix, go into the classroom right in the beginning and say, we're going to review chapter 11 in accounting today. And I have three or four main points that I want to make, and I hope that you've read the lesson, and I want you to ask some questions. We'll try to answer them. And if I have time at the end, I'll work a problem or two that I think may give you difficulty. And that's the plan for today. Then you know when you're through, and they know when you're through. But it gives an example to them that you had a goal. They need to have a goal. You may think you know the lesson. I've been amazed at how many times I thought, well, I know that. I've gone through it many, many times. Maybe you're going to talk about gerunds and infinitives and all those things someday, participles. And you think, well, I know what those are. I would encourage you on a daily basis, if you're going to talk about that today, pick up the book and review it. You'll just know it better. You'll feel more confident about it. There may be some little thing there that you never realized before. You cannot be too prepared to face a bunch of students. I've said sometimes it's like milking cows. They're always there whether you're ready or not. There's ministerial goals that we need to set daily. Parents, we've talked about it with reference to the teacher, but there's parents and there's other staff members that each one of us has a responsibility to. Don't you appreciate it when a parent or a teacher calls you, and maybe we'll talk more about this, and tells you that they appreciate what you did? And then I've thought about it before. Edward, how long has it been since you called a parent and told them some special thing their child did and how much you appreciated it? Why don't we return that? Is it only a one-way thing, this thing of appreciation? And so we can set those daily goals. One call a day for your lunch hour. Whenever. Before school. After school. I know time's precious, but we need to put a priority on things that pay big dividends. You can talk to them. You can call them. I have already, maybe I knew the parent wasn't home. I have already written a note and given it to one of their children in the room. Say, give this to your mom today or your dad when you get home. And they know you wrote it. Many times, depending on what it is, most of the time I tell them, read it if you want to. You know, so they don't think you're sending something home bad about them. Go ahead and read it. Appreciate it if you would. Yearly goals. Daily goals, we're calling short-term goals. How about yearly goals as a teacher, as a school? Each year is a team effort between you and the staff. Each day is a team effort between you and the student. Each year is a team effort between you and the staff. And no one likes to work with a staff member that's hard to get along with. So have you ever looked at yourself and said, what is there about me maybe that's hard to get along with? I mean, haven't you worked with people that there's times you wish they would take a good look at themselves? What is it I appreciate in another staff member? What is it I appreciate in the principal? And this year, whatever I appreciate in them, this year when opportunity affords, you can't do that every day, but you can set yourself a yearly goal that I am going to show appreciation to the principal or another teacher or whatever for something that they do, either for me or that I see them do for the children or whatever it is. Those can be yearly goals that we can set with reference to team members. We've talked a lot about the preparation of a teacher and all of that, and it's all interesting. I basically agree with all of it. And I thought one day, with reference to a school, you know, this is a nice school here, nicer than ours in many ways, more spacious, we're crowded. Beautiful setting, much more beautiful setting. Nice library. I'm sure they have good books here, good curriculum. I don't know what curriculum they use, but I haven't really ever seen any bad curriculum. If you took a cross-section of 100 students, a grammar school, maybe even teenage high schoolers in America today, how much difference would there be in those students? I mean, there'd be a few of them that'd be good scholars. There'd be a few of them that could care less about what went on at school. I mean, you'd have everything, wouldn't you? What is really the heart of a school? And it's been alluded to here today. What is really the greatest single factor in the success of a school? You can have the greatest building, you can have the greatest books, you can have the best playground, and the students are basically all alike, but it's the teacher. It's the teacher. That's what rubs off on the student. And so, we need to realize how much difference, not only as teacher, but as a parent, as a pastor, just as a brother in a church. Do you realize the significance that one person is? Never, never think that I'm just 200 people in this congregation, and I cannot for the life of me figure out what it matters what I do. Now, people don't say those words, but they certainly portray it. And we as teachers need to realize the importance of where we are. Don't get proud about it. Don't get heady about it. In fact, if you really understand it, it will humble you. Definitely. So what have we done as a teacher? What have I done in the last year to progress academically? Even in a little way. Don't sit still. You know, I just now think of that writing on the blackboard that somebody put. Even if you're on the right track, if you sit there, you'll get run over. Don't sit still. Even in a little way, academically. What have you done to grow spiritually? Are you going to tell the same stories in class this year as you told last year and the year before? Or have you read something different? Have you gotten some new insight out of the Bible? Do you have a program to read the Bible, to study it? We need to have personal, yearly goals as teachers. Hopefully, we're not the same people this year as we were last year. When I think of that, I went to school. When I went to grammar school, I went to a little two-room schoolhouse. Very poor facilities. No science. I don't even remember the word science mentioned in my first 8 years of school. No science facilities. Crowded. One teacher for about 35 students in the room that I was in. But you know what? In the local high school system, the students that came out of that school were noted for their academic ability. And I marvel at that now. I didn't think that much about it then. I knew that was true. The teachers would tell us that. And that was kind of common knowledge. Little Prescott School turned out some excellent students. And you know what the key to all of that was? Well, it was a Mrs. York and a Mrs. Muncie, two women that taught in that school for many, many years and knew what they were doing. That's what did it. And I appreciated the brother that mentioned discipline. Don't be afraid to discipline a child. I can remember Mrs. York getting so upset with me, whacking my hands, making me sit with a girl that I didn't like, and nobody else did, because of something that I did. But you know what? Through all of that, and there was even one time she punished me when she was wrong, and I didn't try to tell her, but she didn't know it. But you know what? I think of her with good thoughts. And why do I think of her with good thoughts? It's because there's no doubt in my mind that she really cared for me. She really did love me. Just as a little child, I perceived that. And if you ask me how I knew that, I don't know how I knew that, but I know it. And that's why we can think back on all those things. So a teacher is a key in a school. And we have individualized curriculum, but the teacher is still the key in the school. We need to have yearly goals for a class. If I get too long here, you'll tell me. When should I be done? You need to have yearly goals for a class. If you taught math last year and it was fourth graders or third graders or fifth graders, I don't know where they learn their math facts. I don't teach the lower grades. But if you feel like that you didn't do as good a job as you would like to have in that last year, you need to have a plan this year, a goal that you're going to do better. And just to say, you know, I'm going to do better in teaching math facts this year, how are you going to do better? Unless you have a plan. Instead of spending 10 minutes or 15 minutes or however long you spent and whenever you spent it, I'm going to spend a half an hour. And this is when that half an hour is going to be. It's not going to be after lunch when everybody's sleepy. It's going to be before lunch. Maybe change the time. Maybe change the length of time. And set a plan and a goal to do it. Maybe get an older high school student to come over and reinforce them. Maybe have a mother to come in one or two days a week. Something But if you're going to do better in a subject, you've got to have a plan to do better. Just to say, I'm going to do better, won't get you anywhere, unless you're different than me. So you need to have a plan, and it doesn't matter if it's math or whatever it is. If you want to improve over what happened last year, you need to have a plan, a goal, and then do it. We need to have a goal for the school, the whole school. And we talk about this at our staff. There's about 10 teachers at our school. We talk about this at staff meetings. We have them every morning. We wouldn't do without them. And your standards need to be high. Your academic and your spiritual standards. Don't compare yourself by the worst around you or, did better in some standardized test than some other school or whatever. There's a saying that in the land of the blind, the one-eyed is king. If you associate yourself with low enough people, you'll look wise. But that's no virtue. That's no virtue. And we need to have school goals. If you're a principal or you're a teacher, talk to the principal and say, you know, it looks to me like in this whole school system that we have, here is something that's missing or that needs to be reinforced. And if it's a problem in high school, the seed of that problem may be down in first grade, second grade, third grade. Talk to it. Talk about it as a staff. Talk about how you can change that, reinforce that, because you cannot do it alone if it's a school problem. So you need to have high standards, academic and spiritual. Are you really meeting the spiritual needs of the children? And you know, we hear this talk, and we heard it today, as we think about spiritual and academic standards, goals for our school. What's the most important thing in a school? Is it the academics? Is it the math and reading, writing, and arithmetic in your school? Or is it pointing the child toward God? Well, somebody will say, well, if it wasn't for reading, writing, and arithmetic, we wouldn't have the school. And then somebody else says correctly, well, yeah, but if we're not interested in the spiritual, might as well send them down the street to the public school. And all those questions about what's the most important is like asking a married couple, which one of you is the most important? It's a poor question. They're both important. That's why you're there. And to put one of them, to relegate one of them to a second class is really not being fair. It's not being honest. And so they're both important, and we need to have spiritual goals, and we'll talk more about that later, but we need to have yearly spiritual goals. The singing, that's one thing, just as an example, what we did at our school, we are not where you people are with singing. It has been suppressed, I'll say it that way, in the past. And getting students interested in singing has been a real problem. But as a whole staff, we've worked at that. And in 10 years, we're amazed at the progress. You probably wouldn't be. But I know that if everybody works together at something, you can improve it. You can do better. But if you don't work together at it, you're going to have difficulty no matter what you do personally. Some yearly goals you might have as a teacher, personal goals for the students. I try to send each of them each year a birthday card laid on their desk. And you don't need to say much. That doesn't take a long time. If what little you say, you mean, that's a bigger key than the volume of words. You can just do little things like that. And I'm amazed at how many parents call me afterwards and say, you know, Gina come home and she showed me the card you gave her. She was really pleased. That means a lot to them because you took the time to do it. And I would encourage us to do that kind of thing. One last yearly goal that I think a teacher should have for the students, and that is to look at their class and look at each student and see what you believe is a talent there that you can improve on. And I pity the teacher that looks at a student and doesn't see any. And I know that can happen. I mean, you can really wonder, you know, what did God put in this person? Right now, I'm not seeing it. And they become little geniuses at covering it up. But we need to have a personal goal in that year for each student. Now, if you have very many students, that can be a job, but it'll pay big dividends. What is there that God is wanting to develop in the student? Do I see it? Do I know what they are? That may take some doing, may take some prayer, may take some talking, may take some study. There's books about the gifts and whatnot. The Bible says quite a bit about it. Romans 10, Ephesians 4, 1 Corinthians 12, some of those chapters. You can read those, and it's very revealing what they say. But everybody, God made every person on this earth for a purpose. And I've looked at a student before and really wondered what it was. I mean, that's just the way they do. But we need to do that because there is something there and we can encourage it. And when you see that, no matter how obscure it is, we can bring it out. And we need to do that. And remember, they may be gifts that we don't have. I believe Lyle said he couldn't bake a cake. But as a minister in his congregation, it would be his duty to see that somebody bakes cakes, wouldn't it? And so there may be students there, and I'm sure that there are, that do not have talents, that have talents that you do not have. And we need to encourage them. We need to see that those are used. Now, in the beginning of this, Lyle talked about bearing fruit, and that song that he has is about that. And the last goal that we want to talk about is eternal goals. And this is going to tie in with the one main question, other than those that are in that outline, that I'm going to have. And I'll tell you what that is before we sit down. But eternal goals, that's a long-range goal, isn't it? That's a permanent long-range goal. But as Christian teachers, if we do not have an eternal design on the students that we teach, what are we doing? Even sisters, and I appreciate that many of you here, the interest that you show. And in our circles, it's been difficult for sisters to express themselves in those ways, particularly to little children. But they've made a lot of progress in that. But we need to have a spiritual goal, eternal goal, for each child. Not just happiness here. The Christian life ought to be a happy one, with even though it has attendant problems. But we need to have an eternal goal for our children. And so a Christian teacher without that really is missing the greatest goal of all. God had an eternal goal for man. God had a plan. This thing of having a goal and a plan isn't something that men cooked up, but God did before the foundation of the world. It said He intended to send His Son, Jesus Christ, to save us from our sin. That's the plan God had. That ought to disturb us if we served a God that didn't have a plan for our salvation. So God believes in planning. God recognizes the value of every individual. He recognizes that there's very few people that are going to respond. And when you talk about teachers, I had to think the other morning at devotions, I believe, James here mentioned the Marine Corps. You know one of the mottos of the Marine Corps? They're looking for a few good men. And that's what the Christian schools are doing. They're looking for a few good people. And they're rare. There aren't a lot of them. I believe in 1 Chronicles 16:9, it is, God says that He's going to and fro looking for, that He might show Himself strong to those that have a perfect heart. He's searching for them. They aren't in the masses. And that's the goal of, the eternal goal that God has for every person. And as a Christian school teacher, we're ministers of His, and we need to promote that goal. So I have one question that I would like to ask before we ask the one big one at the end. I have 5 points here with reference to eternal goals. One of them, why is it that spiritual purity is always perceived as being at odds with academic excellence? I mean, even in this discussion here today, I kind of get that feeling. It's like you got to put emphasis on one or the other. You're either going to have a spiritually good atmosphere and a second-rate academic program, or it's going to be the other way around. Is that a fair question? Why is that? Why can't we have both? Or is that too ideal? Why is spiritual purity, however you want to word it, always perceived as being at odds with academic excellence. Did God really mean for us to do a second-class or third-class job with mathematics? Do you think he really did? Why doesn't? I don't think anybody would agree with that. He meant for us to do a first-class job. We're first-class people. We're his. We have the ability, and we need to do it. Number two, thinking about eternal goals, these all kind of tied together. Isn't our goal of heaven for each child? If you had a little Johnny in your class forever how many years, and I had him for 4 years in high school, and he ended up going astray and ends up in hell, really, wasn't it a waste of our time? I mean, what was it all about? What's the deal? It's a waste of time. So one of our eternal goals ought to be heaven for each child. And how do you do that? Well, I don't have all the answers to do that, but I know one way to do that. And particularly if little Johnny is a problem, and Jesus Christ did this, we have to focus. And to me, if somebody was going to ask me what my philosophy of Christian teaching is, I would say that we need to focus on what every child can become and not what they are. And that's what God did in John 8. Jesus himself, those men were going to kill that woman. She was an evil, adulterous, immoral woman. That's not what Jesus saw in her. He saw a saint. And everybody else saw her as being a hopeless mess. And we do that with children, particularly. We don't do that with our own, you know, but other people's children, and that's what we have. We need to focus on what they can become and not what they are. Because there's something valuable in there. God made them. And it'll change our attitude. It'll change our attitude. And when I hear a teacher say, as I've heard him say, I've done everything there is to do with that child, I don't know what else to do. I'm done. I'm finished. Brother and sister, there is always one more thing to do. Always one more thing to do. I've never seen it fail. And when I hear him say, I said, no, wait a minute. Have you tried this? Well, no, but I know it won't work. And so we need to look at that child and see. Think what God saw when he saw Saul, this man that was killing people. And so look at a child and just think, is there an apostle in there trying to get out? And if there is, what can I do to help him? If you were there, what would you want? Number three, we need to be dedicated. We're thinking about this eternal goal. We need to be dedicated to the idea that I'm going to use my God-given resources to tear down barriers between people and God. Now, these all kind of tie together. Paul says, I'll gladly spend and be spent. And somebody says, well, yeah, but you spent an hour of your time last night or this morning or 3 hours or however many hours. If you're a teacher and that student is in your school, you're going to spend that time anyway and staying awake nights worrying about it. I'd rather spend that time beforehand doing something for the child. We need to spend and be spent. That's all we're here for. So you lost 2 hours sleep? You lost 2 hours sleep. What is more important? Are we really willing to spend and be spent? Or are we going to protect our little world at all costs? And if we have to teach with that cost, then we'll get out, and that's why people get out. The fourth thing we want to mention, and this is with reference to salvation, in Isaiah 50 and 4, there's a verse there with reference to Jesus Christ, and it says, the Lord God hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I might know how to speak a word in season to him that is weary. Words are powerful things. There is power in the spoken word. And we need to impart that to children. At the proper time, we need to tell them about, even if they don't believe it, if you tell them like you mean it, and I trust that you do, that God does love them, God is concerned about them, that God is interested in their happiness, in their salvation, and you are too. tell them. It needs to be verbalized, but it needs to be reinforced by your actions, by the look on your face, and all kinds of things. Proverbs 15:23 says, "The word spoken in season, how good it is." And boy, to a boy or a girl that thinks the end of the world has come because they don't have their math done or something, the right word is very good. It's how good it is. The last thing that we want us to think about with reference to eternal goals is the fact that we may be the teacher and we hand out report cards to students, but remember that sometime we're going to get a report card. 2 Corinthians 5:10 says we must all appear before the judgment seat of God. And if we haven't done our Christian duty, if we haven't done what God has given us the opportunity to that somebody mentioned, these are the responsibilities, they're opportunities, we're going to be held accountable for that. And if we're not willing to pay that price, then we shouldn't be a Christian teacher. Maybe that's being a little harsh. Now, quickly about some of the hindrances. I have 7 of them down here. What are the hindrances to all of this? This sounds awful ideal, and I know it works. My personal testimony, I could give you time after time of personal testimony. I know it works. Well, one of the hindrances is, and this upsets some teachers, anyone can make any plan fail. You can have the best curriculum, and if a child wants to, they can make it fail with them. And in their parents' eyes, another teacher can do that. You can have the best idea. You can have the best plan as how to solve some problem. But if there's somebody else doesn't think it'll work, they'll make sure that it doesn't work. And that's some of the hindrances. And you know the seat of all these hindrances? The core of all of them? And we don't like to hear the words, and we've come out of an era, when in times past, they would talk about hellfire and damnation sermons. But do you know what? In the day and age in which we live, the core of all these hindrances is the devil himself. And we need to recognize that. He's alive and well. I don't like a lot of things in that book, but a lot of things in that book are worth reading. I believe Hal Lindsey's The Devil's Alive and Well or something like that. There's a lot of real truths in there, and he is. Because what else would thwart God's plan? We mentioned one of the hindrances is that we as teachers have expectations of appreciation. This may sound funny. I'm 55 years old, and do you know that a 14-year-old freshman student can say something and hurt my feelings? It's true. You know, it just crushes you at the moment. And I say, "What? Why do I let that affect me?" Well, part of it is because we care for people. We really maybe don't care about ourselves as much as them, if that's what's in them. But that can happen. And that can eat on you. And we've got to be careful of where our expectations come from. If we're going to be Christian teachers because we think there's going to be this flood of appreciation from students and parents. Now, that may come. And before we sit down, we want to share some of that. But if that's what we expect, if our happiness is going to depend on that, then we're going to be disappointed. We need to recognize, with reference to hindrances number 3, that there are conditions beyond our control. And that is, it's so upsetting to us, possibly. This boy, he's having a hard time. He won't do his work. He seems very upset. He seems very edgy. And many times, maybe I'll call the parent, and there's things going on at home. You can't control what goes on at home. Don't take the responsibility for every problem and failure in your classroom. That's more responsibility than God intended for us to take. And we as teachers tend to do that. These are our children. And we look at them as ours while they're there. And that's not all bad, but it is bad if we don't recognize that there are things that go on in the homes where they are that are outside of our control. And I would encourage this. I've had parents even call and say, you know, there's been some problems here at home. And so-and-so is upset, if you'd just be a little easy on them this week. I'll do that for a week. You know, just if you can. And that's a good thing to know. Because how many times do you suppose a student left home and the last thing they heard going out the door was, Now you be sure and whatever it was, get your goals all done today. And so they're coming to school all day, all the way to school, thinking about, boy, you know, that sure isn't fair. And they're half mad at dad or mom or both. And you get to school, and they're at school 1 hour. They've sat there for an hour and brooded about it. And a teacher comes along and says, you going to get your goals done today?
Ah.
I had them just break out, collapse in tears. Just, you know, I thought I said it kindly. But it was just one more straw than they could carry. And it's good to be sensitive to that. One of the hindrances are other teachers. Others do not share our vision. And somebody here mentioned the vision. Not everybody shares our vision. Not everybody shares your feelings. And we need to be sensitive to that. There's a word, synergism. I don't know if you've ever heard of that word before. I forget now where I come upon it. It's S-Y-N-E-R-G-I-S-M. Synergism. And this defies physical laws. Synergism says that a cooperative effort has greater effect than the effort of the individual parts. That's saying that you and me together can do more than what each of us separately can do. Synergism. That's kind of neat, isn't it? And that's true. And so there are things, there are visions that you share, there are feelings that you have that can only reach their fulfillment if others cooperate. And for varying reasons, there may be times when others will not cooperate. And we cannot take the responsibility for that, or we'll end up sick in bed with a headache. And worse. Number five, we hang on to a failing plan. I learned this early on, and a brother that taught in a public school told me that, and it's been a little gem that I've appreciated. You can have the greatest idea to solve some little problem or big one, and you know it's a great idea because you're the one that thought of it. But you know, sometimes they just don't work. For whatever reason, and you're not always sure, sometimes you are, don't hang on to a failure. Just swallow your pride and say, you know, gave it my best shot and it didn't work. We're going to try something else. Because teachers tend to do that. They're going to see that this thing works at all costs. And they frustrate themselves and the students and the whole school over it. So if you end up with a failing plan for whatever reason, just drop it and do something else. Another reason that plans fail, goals are not accomplished, is an overall school goal of excellence is lacking among Christian schools. Now that's an indictment that I'm throwing out. I see that. There's an overall burning desire to do the best job, and that's a hindrance. We get comfortable. I can see that in our own school. Somebody comes into school, they do a good job. Maybe they've had adequate training, and the job that they do that is going good, they get comfortable in that, and they do not want to grow. They want to stay right there in that little world, just doing the same things every year, every day, the same way. There's a reluctance to reach out among Christian school people. Number seven, the last one is just an attitude on the part of the teacher of overall discouragement. That can come from many, many things. We mentioned the child. We mentioned all kinds of things. We got to realize that we're doing God's work, and we need God's approval. And if you don't feel like you have God's approval, then I think you ought to be discouraged. I think maybe you ought to do something else. But if you really feel in your heart you have God's approval, then we should not hinge our well-being as Christian teachers so much on other people. I'll give you one example of that. They're my friends, I thought. Had a student in our high school, and the mother told me that she really didn't think that I understood teenage girls that well. And they took their child out of the school, and that hurt me. Not that I had ever really given it a lot of thought, and I thought that I understood teenage girls that well, but I certainly took exception to somebody very pointedly saying that I didn't. And, you know, I all of a sudden flopped on the other side of the opinion, and I thought maybe I did, although up to that time I hadn't really thought about it. I mean, isn't that the way we are? I never really had to reach that decision, and all of a sudden I did. And I've gone home more nights than once, wondering in my heart, how this could continue. And it's things like that that can hurt you right down in the middle of your very being. But the saving grace to that, and I'm not, I wish that it wouldn't have turned out this way, but that girl's still in trouble. She might have been if she just stayed in school. I don't know. But my conclusion was, as a parent, didn't understand teenage girls too well either. And I want to say that kindly, but I'm just pointing out, it's amazing. If people would have told me before I got in the teaching, left what I was doing and started teaching, if people would have told me everything that I would be told, I would not have believed them. The people, parents, would tell me what they tell me. And I'm sure you're going to have and have had those experiences. Now, sometime, and we won't take a lot of time with this, but turn to 2 Corinthians 4. And some of you at the workshop, and we won't spend a lot of time on it, but if you want to, if you're a Christian teacher and you get discouraged or you want something to build your spirits, read this chapter. It is a lot of the thoughts expressed here are in other chapters in the Bible, but I don't know anywhere where they're all in just 18 verses as concise as they are here. And he starts this chapter out and he says, therefore, seeing we have this ministry, teaching in a Christian school is a ministry. It's not just for a paycheck. And I listened to all of that about why teachers quit and pay always comes up. And that may be true in some place, in some cases. I don't want to be overly hard on that. But I really believe in our school, if they cut our pay in half, I think virtually every one of our teachers would stay there. They are dedicated people. They are not there for that reason. And I'm not saying that our pay ought to be cut in half. And I'm not saying Christian teachers' pay is what it ought to be. I'm saying that is not why we're there. And if God wants us to be there, all of that will take place some other way. Just don't worry about it. I mean, isn't that nice? Just don't worry about it. I've had to learn that. If anybody asks you, tell them I've learned it. But we have a ministry. As we have received mercy, we're not going to faint. We're not going to quit. I believe Brother Dale mentioned his boy, don't quit, or do not give up. That was the words. It was written in his Bible that they found after he passed away just recently. Do not give up. And that's what Paul's saying here. We've received mercy as we've received mercy, as we have received the infilling of the Spirit from God. Don't faint. Don't give up. But we've renounced the hidden things of dishonesty, not walking in craftiness. Be open with your students, not handling the word of God deceitfully. Be open about that. By manifestation of the truth, commending ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God. We need to conduct our lives so that people do not have their conscience turned against God, but toward God. If our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost. Are you open with your students? Do they know what you really believe? Do they know what your faith really is? That's the responsibility that we have as Christian teachers. And if we really do that, we won't get discouraged about it. I'll skip some of this. 5, for if we preach not ourselves, but Christ Jesus our Lord. We aren't there for our own good. We're there for the good of the students. And ourselves, your servants, for Jesus' sake. And he goes on there, and the reason is in the 7th verse, because we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. Everything good that happens in our school is not because of me. It's because of God working in me. It's because of God working in you. And Paul says, you think Paul didn't have a hard time? Read these verses. We're troubled on every side. There's times when Paul didn't know what to do. He didn't know what to think. You ever know not what to do or what to think? I've gone home and told Barbara Ann, I don't know. I do not know what to do or think. But we're not distressed. We're not going to give up. We're perplexed. I cannot figure out what's going on. But not in despair. God's still there, persecuted, but not forsaken. People say things about us they shouldn't. But God's still there, cast down, but not destroyed. Always a bearing about in the body, the dying of the Lord Jesus, that the life also of Jesus might be manifest in our flesh. If we could read that in the Living, the 10th, the 11th, and the 12th verse, these bodies of ours are constantly facing death, abuse, just as Jesus did. So it is clear to all that it is only the living Christ within who keeps us going. Number 11, yes, we live under constant danger to our lives, our reputations, I'll add, because we serve the Lord, but this gives us opportunities to shew forth the power of Jesus Christ within our dying bodies. As long as everybody says good things about you, how are you going to demonstrate the character of Jesus Christ in your life? But how about when people say bad things about you? Students, parents. That's an opportunity. 12. Because of our preaching, we face death, but it has resulted in eternal life for you. We're doing it for the eternal life of the students. And the 16th verse, we want to skip up there. For which cause we faint not. That's the reason we're not going to give up, because all that's true. But though our outward man perish, little me's dying every day, yet the inward man is renewed day by day. I see the glory of God clear all the time. For our light affliction, and Paul plays on words here, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, this is all going to pass away. It's just a moment, he says. Light affliction for a moment worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. That's why we're here. While we look not at the things which are seen, don't focus on what's there. Focus on what can be there, but at the things which are not seen. There's something there I'm not seeing in that child. For the things which are seen are temporal, all that behavior, all that whole business, that's just temporal, that's going to pass away. But that soul within, but the things which are not seen are eternal. And that ought to be our goal, is to point each child to that. Now, here's the question. One more question. I don't know how many I've asked. But one question I'd like to ask is, can students be an eternal failure and the teacher be an earthly success? And the answer to that question will depend on what your daily and your yearly goals are. Can the student be an eternal failure and the teacher be an earthly success? Now, lest we get the idea that teaching's all bad, I want to share with you why I keep going, and then I'm going to read a poem, and then I'm going to sit down. I have three cards here. Here's one from a boy that at one time I really wondered about him. And he graduated this year. He accepted the Lord, and here's what he wrote. And there's no question in my mind that he wrote this because he believes it. It's impossible to say how much I appreciate all you've done for all of us. We may not always act it, but you know we love you a lot. Thanks again for all you've done, and may God bless you as you sacrifice more of your time. In his love, your friend and brother, Doug. That's a 17-year-old boy that had some struggles, but we'll be friends forever. There's no question in my mind. Not that I'm so great in these, I just want you to know why I keep going and why you keep going. We've portrayed the whole thing as kind of a tough road. How about this one? Thanks for believing in me and for helping me to believe in myself. I am a better person because of you. And that's in the card. This card says what I believe. I don't know what else to say except thanks. Your guidance and teaching has helped me a lot, as well as others. John Overholzer. That's from the boy of the family that makes Overholzer church furniture. One more. Ed, thank you for helping to make this year an exceptional one. This is from two girls that are as near perfect as any two girls can be. Not only do we appreciate your teaching skills, but we also appreciate all of the little extras you do to make school fun. Have a great summer. Love, Sarah and Amy. And if it wasn't, you know, we're people. And if it wasn't for things like that, if it was all bad, if it was all difficulty, probably all of us would succumb and give up. But there are rewards. And I know that there are more rewards eternal than what we see just in those, but those keep us going. That's the way we are as human beings. Now, I want to read this poem. Probably most of you know it. We're going to sit down. It speaks of why we're here. We're interested in a child's immortal soul. A builder builded a temple. He wrought it with grace and skill. Pillars and groins and arches all fashioned to work his will. Men said as they saw its beauty, it shall never know decay. Great is thy skill, O builder, thy fame shall endure for aye. A mother builded a temple with loving and infinite care. We might say a teacher if you want to substitute it. Planning each arch with patience, laying each stone with prayer. None praised her unceasing efforts, none knew of her wondrous plan. For the temple the mother builded was unseen by the eyes of men. Gone is the builder's temple, crumpled into the dust. Low lies each stately pillar, food for consuming rust. But the temple the mother builded will last while the ages roll, for that beautiful unseen temple is a child's immortal soul.
James note. Okay? Do you have someone? Are you ready?
Just a few comments from our group discussion. One point was on the having an exact schedule, being well prepared versus being flexible. Ed had shared about the undesirability of being too flexible, in that we don't want our students to be too flexible. We also discussed the need for taking advantage of a teachable moment when students are interested, when a question has been raised that has their attention, then take advantage of that, even as Jesus also took advantage of teachable moments and allowed himself to be disrupted and attend to a need while he was going on his way to attend to another need, such as the example where the woman touched the hem of his garment. On the question of whether spiritual purity is compatible with academic excellence, a thought was expressed that maybe it's because of our carnality that sometimes we pit things against each other that do not need to be pitted against each other. We should perhaps view academic excellence the same way that we view excellence in other areas, such as in our vocations, such as farming and so forth. Maybe we sometimes overly react to some of the humanistic view that persons have that are involved with high education and so on. I like to promote the thought of temperance here in all things. And I also, in the discussion, had shared an observation that I think has some implications for the life of the church and the groups that we're involved in this thing of academic excellence. That term is a relative term to many people. Academic excellence can mean many different things. But as the observation I would like to leave with the group here is, if we compare the group that's represented here with the, what we might call, the mainstream Mennonite church, and we look at what we're promoting today in our schools relative to academic excellence and what our goals are for church life in the future, I think there's some observations from history that can help inform our consciences and our methods and procedures that we follow. It was in the early 1900s that the Mennonite Church really got into the higher education thing, with the beginnings of Goshen College, and about 19 years later, 1917, the beginning of Eastern Mennonite College, and so forth. Now, the question I would like to raise is, how many of our direct ancestors were involved in that movement? I will venture that we are here as a conservative, as a branch of the Conservative Mennonite Church, and the people that are represented here were a part, our ancestors were a part of the people that were not involved in that movement, and the ancestors or the descendants of the people that were in that movement are at a different place than what we are in their convictions about church life. And so I think there's some things that we can examine there. And I'm not saying that as a slam against higher education. I myself have attended college and so forth. Moving on to another thought. And the thought of hindrances, we had a closing challenge from one of the brethren in our discussion groups that we should have our eyes on Christ. The Bible verse, the more I will gladly spend and be spent, that's a challenging thought, but the rest of that verse says, though the more I love, the less I be loved. the Apostle Paul experienced that at times. And so our efforts are not necessarily always rewarded by the kind of notes that were read off here, but as was also said, we appreciate those notes. And so there's times that simply we need to overcome the hindrances by having our eyes on Jesus Christ.
I can only speak for one in the room, but my father was educated some of the time at Goshen College. He taught several years at Heston College in Kansas, and he taught 15 years maybe at Eastern Mennonite High School and College. And that is the only schooling that I have known from the 8th grade on in the classroom setting. So I would humbly say today that I am a product of some of those who had vision in that area. And I realize that many of my friends who went to school with me are not at the same place in our church life. And that is one of the reasons why I'm active in Faith Builders today. Because there are differences, and there are things that can be done, we believe, that a person's commitment to follow Christ is more central in his pursuit of education or in his need for education. And the reason he wants to acquire an education and the reason and what he does with it after he has it. It's his commitment to Christ that is important. And we believe that Faith Builders can help keep that commitment central in the person's experience. That's our aim. All right, the next section, 103. Dave Hostetter.
Well, I'm one of the Dave Hostetlers here today. Except I usually go by Dave Hosteller. We talked about that one question, spiritual purity versus academic excellence, and the statement was made that, and I would agree with this, that academic excellence in purest form cannot be reached without spiritual purity. And the world would like to separate the two, saying you can't have one without the other. And it seems like we get caught up in the same thinking. Sometimes, you know, very simply, can you be a Christian and have fun? I say a hearty yes. And the world would have us believe that we can. I think that's the same in this situation here. We can pick up impressions from the world system view that we might not be aware that we carry. Then we looked at a few other questions, such as how to avoid getting bogged down. And someone shared having a person you can share with about what you're facing at school, who can, they'll help you see it from a different angle. They'll give you a new perspective on it. Prayer, remaining right before God. Some other things we talked about. And then how to handle distractions. I think the paper says detractions, I think, but we talked about distractions. And it was shared, use them as a learning tools for you and the student. Everything that comes into life, see what we can learn from and use that in your classroom. And then, can students be eternal failure and teacher be an earthly success? I think we came up with the answer yes to that. I don't know what Ed's answer was, but We're looking at the earthly success, the way people look at you, around you. People can perceive you as a success, and yet where, you know, as far as being eternal success, that's a bit different than a earthly success. And is a school a failure if children do not receive Christ by grade 12? I'm not sure if we quite answered that, but I know personally I would think that's putting a little too much responsibility on the school. And then we talked about the purpose of the school. Are we there just for academics? Are we there to... That was tied in with this discussion of the spiritual life of the children. And then we talked about the what is our purpose of life? And how the purpose of a school teacher's life is the same as the purpose of anybody else's life. It's not like we're in different boxes with the construction worker or the if you're a school teacher, your purpose in life is to glorify God and lead others to Christ. And if you're out on any other kind of job, that's your purpose in life. So I don't see the purpose of the school as being any different from any other institution or job. So we kind of took that back to what is our purpose of life to find the answer to what the purpose of the school is.
Simon Helmuth is going to give the report.
One of them shared about short-term goals on behalf of the teachers is that I think in the presentation we had something pertaining that we penalize students for not getting their work done, and the teachers like to have flexibility. Someone mentioned, though, that suppose you have a disruption in your class, and do you panic because you're not finishing or accomplish your goal? That can be more devastating than just calmly accepting it, that we won't accomplish it today, our goals, and go on from there. I think it's very important that the atmosphere that we leave with our students, if we leave them in a disruptive manner and go home that way, that's what remains focused in their minds. And if we can be calm about it and deal with the situation and go on from there, can enhance their learning. Some long-term goals that we discussed was how to teach them how to relate with each other. You know, I think it's very good material that needs to be cultivated. There seem to be a lot of church conflicts in our day. You know, possibly if we start with them in a younger age, how to relate with each other, we wouldn't have so many church conflicts when they get to be seniors. And I think that's a very important focus and long-range goal, that we can teach them how to relate to each other in spite of conflict. And that would kind of brought us to another area. Some distractions, and discussed about some of the conflicts we experience maybe with parents, students, or with other teachers. Humanistic approaches to get rid of them, you know, expel the student, don't have anything to do with the parents anymore, or get rid of the teacher. But a more positive approach would be to dissolve our conflicts and see if we can't. One shared how he was bogged down with something that he needed to go talk with the parents, and he just dreaded the idea of having to go there or put it off for 2 months. And once he went away, it was a completely different atmosphere. It wasn't as bad as he thought. And if he just went 2 months earlier, it could have saved him all this time of worry. Let me share about the talents of the student. Focusing on that and getting the student to see some of the abilities they have, and I see as this a tremendous ministry, in that students need to see that there's self-worth. They have things, talents that can be used for the Lord, and to challenge that to in the right direction is tremendous. What are some of the things that bogs us down? One mentioned that make sure you get your sleep. Teacher comes all drowsy. I had a hard night, and you know, I think it's we come to school fresh and perked. And one of those things that possibly cause us to get a lack of sleep is over obligations. Maybe we've been assigned a topic for Wednesday night and song leader Sunday morning, and somebody leaves and they want you to substitute for Sunday school class, and you name it. Can we say no? You know, congregation has a high opinion, or at least they should have, of your teachers, and they'd like to use the good material to fill their offices, so they call upon you. Can you say no? And I think there's times when we need to say no. We keep our central focus, that we're here to teach our students, and there are times we can allow ourselves to be used, but don't obligate yourself to the extent that you can't minister to the needs of the students that which you have been assigned to. One thing that helps in keeping our focus on the needs of your students would be to also attend inspirational meetings like we've had today. I think there's opportunities that we can extend our inspiration to our students. Discuss the purity of classes, academic. And the thought was expressed that possibly we have a somewhat of a negative focus on the academic because of the world's focus is basically academic, and possibly it takes too much work to combine the two, the purity, spiritual purity, excellence, and having a balance there. Because possibly I've never really observed where the two have been completely successful. And maybe we in our academic achievements, maybe we always keep the spiritual purity in mind. I think that involves the question that was asked as far as students not making it into a heaven, and the teacher still being considered a success. There was somewhat a question as far as what intent this question was meant, but I kind of felt like that there's a shepherding, involves shepherding, and the teacher involves shepherding with their students. We may be able to accomplish academic levels in their students, but there's a shepherding that involves the spirituality part of the student, where we take an interest in their spirituality, not just their academic achievements. And when a child is lost eternally, it's our loss as well. Do we feel that? Do we have that sense of loss as well with them? On the same token, do we have a child's focus? We focus our attention on child's eternal well-being when we're teaching academic line of academics.
James Weaver's group. All right, Linda Wanger.
Okay, a few things from our group. Can students be an eternal failure and the teacher be an earthly success? It was felt that it's not fair to blame the teacher because each child is responsible for their individual choice. He's responsible for his choice, whether his teacher was a good teacher or a bad teacher. It's just one of those things that all are called but few are chosen. Not all children will turn out the way we would like to see them. Considering the amount of time that a teacher spends with that a child would spend with his teachers in his lifetime, a teacher definitely does have a bearing on influencing the child. As for long-term goals, it was felt that we need to keep our priorities in line. Another thought that was brought out was that we need to show that individual appreciation to the students and to their parents. Sometimes we get involved with our teaching and with our workload, and what gets pushed aside but some of these things. Bogged down, the suggestion was given, have more people, especially the parents, get involved to help with the workload. Also, breaking the routine is good for the teacher and the student. Teachers need to take a weekend off sometimes and go somewhere and not take any books along. I have found that very refreshing, but sometimes it's hard. It's like, I have these spelling papers that just have to be corrected. I think I'll just slip them along. But it's good to leave them at home sometimes. Then also the question, why is spiritual purity perceived as being at odds with academic excellence? That was thought to be a tough question, and yet our Christian schools should be attempting to keep the two together. We need to keep the knowledge of Christ in view, or it will become, or the humanistic view will take over. We should have both.
Orville Zare's group, room 102, Joel.
In our group, we basically addressed four questions. The first one was the last question that Brother Edward had left with us about whether a student could be considered an eternal failure while the teacher is considered to be a success. Our discussion leader said that his initial response would be no, that would not be possible. But then upon further reflection, he thought that it probably would be. And Brother Edward suggested that a teacher could blame himself, or I think he used the expression, could beat himself for life if he always felt that every student who turned out not the way he would have expected him to, if he felt that that's his fault. And, of course, that led us into a discussion of the home, and discussion leader said that the parents must always make sure that the teachers must always make sure that the parents understand that the home is primary over the school. However, it often appears that that role is sometimes reversed. The principal at the school that I'm associated with always reminds us that when the teacher or when the school has undertaken to raise the community's children, he's undertaken a formidable task, and that's unfortunate, but that's often the case. But it must be understood that the parents are primarily responsible, and the teacher is simply an aid in achieving that goal. Another thing that was pointed out in relation to the home is that social change, or the fact that, you know, students are in school while the parents are out working, especially the father, has made the teacher a very centralized part of the student's life, so that the teacher does have a definite effect on the student. Another thing that was mentioned in relation to the home was that if the home does not take its proper place in the life of the student, sometimes loyalties can be turned away from the parents toward the teacher. And our discussion leaders suggested that perhaps a way to reverse that is, for instance, if students come, or rather parents come, and ask about taking their children along for a vacation trip or something that would be somewhat educational, our discussion leaders suggested that that would be allowed because it helps to develop a rapport between the parents and the students and the teacher. The second question then that we talked about was in relation to the detractions or the distractions in the classroom. Rather than talking so much about things that do bog us down, we talk more about solutions to the problem. One thing that was mentioned was not to lose sight of goals. It's very important. Another thing was, and this was also came through on the topic, was that act enthused even if you don't feel enthused. Don't reveal that you're bogged down. Another thing, a class must be flexible. However, you can't be so flexible that the class suffers. For instance, if the insurance representative calls and talks with you at the school. You shouldn't spend a half hour on the phone talking with him while your class suffers, so you have to be flexible, but yet you can't be too flexible. Another thing was parent-teacher meetings will specific conferences designed can sometimes take care of problems that arise between the school and the parents. And another thing that was suggested was this idea of a time for recreation. Our discussion leader suggested that each teacher should have a hobby, something that he enjoys doing that's not necessarily school-related, and take an evening off where he doesn't do anything in relation to his schoolwork. He said that when he comes home, he leaves the problems of the school at the school, and then when he goes back the next morning, he picks up the problems again. The third question was about the balance between giving something one's all and this idea of being overcommitted. Suggested that in the topic this morning, I think, Brother Orville said that he thinks a teacher needs at least 7.5 to 8 hours of sleep, and one sister in our discussion group said that she doesn't see how that would be possible, but one sister said that you just take time for that. Some other things in relation to that, in relation to answering this idea of the difference between giving it one's all and being overcommitted, one sister gave the illustration of you might say you're going to ride a bicycle and give it your all, so you ride down the road for 2 miles, but you might recognize that that's your limit. You don't go 10 miles giving it your all and finally exterminate yourself, so there's a difference there. Another thing is to take some of these problems to the school board. You might need an assistant. You might be trying to carry too much of a load yourself. And about a half a minute before our discussion group ended, the interesting question again was raised about the compatibility of academic excellence and this idea of spiritual purity. And one brother had an interesting comment, and I'll just share that in conclusion. He said that all Christian schools have been started for the purpose of the spiritual preservation of the school and of the child and of the student. Then, as the school progresses, it appears like the school is academically blessed. And then the school begins to think that they need better teachers, teachers with degrees and so on. And then the sight is lost off of the original reason for the school starting, and then the school goes astray, and then another conservative school needs to be started. But we didn't have enough time to finish the discussion of that.
Ken Ranks Group. Okay.
I think they've given me about 15 seconds. I'm not sure what I should cover in that amount of time. Just a few things. Most of them have been covered. One thing that we talked about in line of daily goals is from Brother Ed's background and some of us as well, we may have come from an area where disciplines in the home and so on were very important, and that can help us in the school as well. Also, we talked about this, that some goals are merely mechanical, something that we're carrying out, but the goals that are really important have to do with people. Let's keep that foremost. The goals that have to do with people. And then, that even the interruptions to our best goals can lead us to opportunities. Let's not lose sight of the opportunities of interruptions. And then to set achievable goals. Little on spiritual purity versus or academic excellence. One brother mentioned that sometimes the level of our spiritual growth limits what else we do in life. So the higher we go with Christ, the higher we can go with some of our other pursuits. That was a new thought to me, and I appreciate that. Also, it was mentioned that in the line of education, we've been discussing today how much is good for us. And the thought was brought that if we're gathering information just for the sake of gathering it, and there's a lot doing that, going to colleges with no major and just going for the sake of going, it's a little like the children of Israel that gathered extra manna, and you know what happened to it after that? It stank. It rotted. So let's gather what we need and what we can utilize as well. Long-range goals, we spent quite a bit of time on that. Let's keep in mind that the long-range goal is heaven for each child. Then how is it that sometimes it seems we can't quite harmonize the goals of the teachers? the parents and maybe the church. I think we all need to see, and I'm sure we all have the same goal, but sometimes we look at it from different viewpoints, and it almost seems like we're at odds. But really we're not. It's a matter of harmonizing what we really have there. And then to end it, we never even got into the hindrances. I think we stayed positive all the time.
I agree with everything that was said. I don't think I did too bad for short notice. No, I appreciate all those comments, and I do agree with it. I would just like to ask to further extend that. The teacher would certainly feel like a failure, and other people would view him that way if none of his students accepted the Lord, the same as if a parent had 10 children and none of them accepted the Lord. Are they responsible? And if you went to a church where no one accepted the Lord among young people and converted, how would that be? Is the church responsible? Somewhere, somebody has to take some responsibility. But I agree with everything you said. Appreciate it. Thank you.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit christianlearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the docforlearning.org.